On January 1, 1847, a newspaper titled The Liberator published a letter written by Reverend Benjamin Chase. The letter described his visit to Ona Judge, an elderly black woman who shared with him the story of her escape from enslavement at the Washington Estate 50 years prior. Hello, and welcome to The Zed Files. My name is Nina, and I'm here to talk about history. Not all history, just the history I want. And today, I want to talk about Ona Judge. So perhaps unlike my previous episodes, I'm just gonna jump right into it this time without really explaining much beforehand. But you know, I still need to start at the beginning. So, Ona Judge was born sometime around 1774, although the exact date or even year are unknown. Her mother was an enslaved seamstress living in Mansion House Farm, property which fell under the Washington domain. And yes, I mean that Washington, the famous one, the one that also lived during the late 1700s. Based on her last name, her father is believed to be Andrew Judge, but this is not confirmed. Judge was a white English tailor who was hired by Washington from 1772 to 1784. Ona's parentage meant that she was born into slavery. And at age 10, sometime around 1784, she was given her first official post. She became Martha Washington's personal maid. Throughout her childhood, she never received any education, something that she would go on to deeply crave. Judge had one confirmed sister, Delphi, and both, quote, belonged to the Custis estate, but you might recognize the Custis estate as not being the Washington estate. But it is, sorta. This is because of Martha Washington's first husband, Daniel Parke Custis. So, although Ona Judge primarily served the Washington family, she technically, once again, quote, belonged to the descendants of Daniel Parke Custis, so his and Martha's children and grandchildren. Ona was a lot like her mother. She was a very skilled sewer. Martha Washington once said in reference to her that she was the perfect mistress of her needle. In fact, many sources report that Ona Judge was a favorite of Martha Washington, which is likely one of the reasons that she was one of the slaves that Washington brought with him to New York and Pennsylvania when he was elected president in 1789. So, at age 15, she was one of seven other enslaved individuals to travel with the Washingtons, first to New York and then to Pennsylvania. Living in Pennsylvania was a bit of a shift for Ona. Firstly, she was working and operating under weird circumstances. George Washington was secretly rotating slaves in and out of his estate in order to evade the 1780 Pennsylvania emancipation laws. He's quoted in saying on this matter, under pretext that may deceive both them and the public, the them being the slaves. But Pennsylvania was different from rural Virginia for other reasons as well. People were much more progressive in the North. Granted, it was still 1790, so take progressive with a grain of salt, but compared to Virginia, Pennsylvania looked pretty good. In fact, she quickly became friends with free black people and abolitionist groups, and these friends would eventually aid in her escape. But we're not there yet. Through most of Washington's presidency, Judge continued her work waiting on Martha Washington. This meant helping her bathe and dress, as well as cleaning and mending her clothes, organizing her belongings, and, well, anything else she required. Because of Ona's visible position in the household, she received a regular supply of relatively high-quality clothing. Washington's checkbooks show purchases of gowns, shoes, stockings, and bonnets for her. She also began to receive a very small amount of cash from Washington, but not out of the goodness of his heart. It was because he was forced to, once again as a result of the Pennsylvania Emancipation Laws. She also would sometimes be given additional money to go see a play or a circus. And it was on these occasions when she would get out that she would make friends. And quickly, the idea of escaping wasn't so much of an idea anymore, but more of a possibility. Her new friends were providing her with opportunity. In May of 1796, Washington, amid his second term in office, coming to the end of his stretch as the President of the United States, was preparing to return with Martha Washington and her family to Mount Vernon for the summer. On May 20th, as the Washingtons were eating dinner, Ona, who was waiting on that dinner, overheard their conversation, and interestingly, they were discussing plans to give her away to Martha Washington's eldest granddaughter, a Eliza Park Custis Law. This didn't sit well with Ona at all. Eliza Park Custis Law was known to have a fierce temper, and in that moment, Judge became determined never to be her slave. Now, it wasn't like all of a sudden Judge wanted to leave. Of course not. She'd been thinking about it for a while. Naturally, she didn't want to be a slave. And later in her life, she also cited her desire to learn and be educated as another driving force towards her escape. Judge recalled in 1845, "Whilst they were packing to go up to Virginia, I was packing to go. I didn't know where, for I knew that if I went back to Virginia, I should never get my liberty. I had friends among the colored people of Philadelphia. I had my things carried there beforehand and left Washington's house while they were eating dinner." And so, as Ona Judge says herself, that very dinner she fled. But the Washingtons were hot on her trail. 2 days later, ads were posted in the Philadelphia Gazette and the Universal Daily Advertiser, announcing that she had absconded from the president's house and offered a $10 reward for her capture. This ad also provides us with the only physical description of Ona we have. It describes her as a light, mixed-race girl with freckles, very dark eyes, and bushy black hair, as well as being delicately made. This ad also says that she left without any provocation, and because of this, they claim that it's difficult to understand where she would be intending to go, but that she might try and pass as a free woman and escape by boat. The ad also warns against aiding in her escape. These ads are posted by Frederick Kitt, the steward at the executive residence. Kitt becomes the first person to truly devote their time to tracking down Judge. But Judge, aided by her free black and abolitionist friends, manages to make it out of Pennsylvania without being caught. She was able to quickly secure passage on the Nancy, a ship bound for Portsmouth, New Hampshire, commanded by Captain John Bowles, a man whom Ona protected her whole life, only revealing his name after his death, saying, "Lest they should punish him for bringing me away." But see, George Washington was really pissed. Ona's escape was a pretty embarrassing ordeal for him. And in addition to that, Ona Judge was one of his wife's favorites, so he was facing pressure from her as well. Apparently, she stressed about the loss of her maid, who she claimed was brought up and treated more like a child than a servant. She even goes on to say that she was unable to comprehend that she would flee. But Martha Washington even believed for a time that Ona wasn't acting on her own accord. She claimed that she had been seduced and enticed away by a Frenchman. In fact, George Washington even went on to use this as an excuse for Ona's actions. Seriously, there was a time when everyone was blaming Ona's escape on a non-existent French guy. But Martha Washington's distress over Ona's escape wasn't the only person that Washington was facing pressure from. Remember how I mentioned earlier that although Ona worked for the Washingtons and spent all her time with them, technically, she was still owned by the Custis estate. So, in a way, George Washington was only borrowing her. And if he didn't get her back, it meant that legally he would be responsible for reimbursing the Custis estate somehow. So yeah, Washington has some stake in the recapture of Ona Judge. It's not just like he's gonna let her go. But the good news is, Ona Judge makes it to Portsmouth, New Hampshire safely. Granted, she's still a fugitive, she's got to be careful, but at least for the time being, things are looking up. Although it doesn't really last. Just a few months after her arrival, she's spotted on the street by a friend of Nellie Park Custis Law, Martha Washington's youngest granddaughter. Word of her whereabouts doesn't take long to make it back to George Washington, and he doesn't waste a second. He quickly enlists the help of Joseph Whipple, the customs collector in Portsmouth, and it doesn't take long for Whipple to track down Ona. At this time, the Federal Fugitive Slave Law, which was signed by Washington himself, allowed for people who owned slaves to retain legal rights to recapture people who were enslaved that had escaped across state lines with force, if necessary. But Washington was worried that by using violent measures to retrieve Ona, he would be angering the large population of anti-slavery residents in the northern states. So, he told Whipple to attempt to recapture her, but only if it would not, quote, excite a mob or riot. So, all he can really do is try and convince her, which is exactly what he does. When he finds her in Portsmouth, He does his best to get her to board a ship back to Philadelphia, and interestingly, she almost agrees. She tries to make a deal with Whipple, saying that she would only return if he promised that she would be freed when the Washingtons passed. Although Washington was furious with her requests, and he doesn't even consider them, reportedly fuming to Whipple, to enter into such a compromise with her, as she suggested to you, is totally inadmissible. For however well disposed I might be to a gradual abolition or even to an entire emancipation of that description of people, it would neither be politic or just to reward unfaithfulness with a premature preference, and thereby discontent beforehand the minds of all her fellow servants, who, by their steady attachments, are far more deserving than her of favor. So, Judge's request is denied, and she says to him that she should rather suffer death than return to slavery, and liable to be sold or given to any other person. In her conversations with Whipple, she also states that she escaped on her own merit, denying that any Frenchmen were involved. She cites her reasons for leaving as a thirst for complete freedom. It's not confirmed whether Whipple made any more attempts to recapture her, but if he did, she evaded them all. In January of 1797, Ona Judge married Jack Staines, a free black sailor. The couple would go on to have three children together, Eliza, Will, and Nancy, with their first daughter, Eliza, being born a year later in 1798. The next notable attempt that Washington made to recapture Ona was in 1799, shortly before his death, which would come only a few months later. This attempt came in the form of Martha Washington's nephew, Burwell Bassett Jr. Bassett was traveling to New Hampshire on business, but Washington, after learning he was going, enlisted him to locate Judge in Portsmouth, and once again try and persuade her to come, relaying to Bassett the same sentiment he gave to Whipple, to avoid any methods that he this time referred to as troublesome, but Ona Judge had no intention of going with Bassett, not even attempting to negotiate this time, and Bassett became determined to take her by force. But Bassett's big mouth was his Achilles heel. At a dinner held at the home of John Langdon, who was at the time the senator from New Hampshire, Bassett made the dumb decision to announce his violent plans to drag Judge back to Mount Vernon, to the entirety of the attendance. And John Langdon, after being told Bassett's plans, secretly sent a message to Judge telling her to run. Ona's husband was at sea. And so, with her one-year-old daughter, Eliza, in her arms, she hired a horse and carriage to take her to the house of her friend, a free black woman named Nancy Jack, 8 miles north from Portsmouth, in Greenland, New Hampshire. And so, Bassett returned to George Washington empty-handed. Like I mentioned earlier, George Washington died in December of 1799, and following his death, Judge said that the family never troubled her anymore. Famously, in his will, George Washington freed all 123 of his slaves. Although, this did not extend to Ona Judge, because, like I mentioned a couple times, she was Martha Washington's, and therefore would pass down through Martha Washington's lineage. This meant that Ona Judge spent her entire life a fugitive, because, legally, the Custis estate could recapture her at any time. Sadly, her husband died in 1803, and both her daughters predeceased her as well, but during her time in Portsmouth, she also learned to read, fulfilling her desire for mental and moral instruction, something she was denied by the Washingtons. It's likely that Ona Judge never saw her family at Mount Vernon ever again. Her mother died shortly before her escape in January of 1795, and in 1802, her youngest sister, Delphi, was inherited by Eliza Park Custis Law, the very fate that Ona had fled to avoid. In 1840, Ona Judge's story, told in her own words, was published in two abolitionist newspapers, making her one of the few ex-slaves to be able to tell their own story, and one of the only people enslaved by the Washington estate to do so. Ona Judge's story disproves any theories of benevolence on the side of the Washingtons that people sometimes like to preach. Washington avoided abolitionist laws, finding loopholes in the system for his own benefit, and was apparently shocked at the ingratitude of Ona Judge. Before we end, I want to revisit the quote I introduced earlier, demonstrating Washington's response to Ona Judge's request to be freed on his death. He says, "To enter in such a compromise with her, as he suggested to you, is totally inadmissible, For however well disposed I might be to a gradual abolition, or even to an entire emancipation of that description of people, if the latter was in itself practicable at this moment, it would neither be politic or just to reward unfaithfulness with a premature preference, and thereby discontent beforehand the minds of all her fellow servants, who, by their steady attachments, are far more deserving than herself of favor. I wanted to come back to this because I think this quote well highlights the tensions between Washington's so-called anti-slavery principles and the reality that he was himself a slave owner. However open-minded he was to abolitionist principles, it was only as long as it was convenient for him. Which I think is something that is really important to remember. This is also highlighted in his decision to free all his slaves after his death. This act is often used as an argument for Washington's so-called evolving opinions around race, but in the wise words of Erica Armstrong Dunbar, who wrote a book on Ona Judge's story called Never Caught, The Washington's Relentless Pursuit of Their Runaway Slave Ona Judge, she says on the matter, "When it was safe, he emancipated his slaves. He dealt with it after his death, and you know what? That's what all the founders did. They kicked the can down the road." Later in life, when Ona Judge was asked by her interviewers if she was sorry to have left the Washingtons, she replied with, "No, I am free, and have I trust been made a child of God by the means." She died in 1848. In doing research for this episode, I used a few different sources. Like always, all my sources will be linked down below in case you're interested in doing any more research yourself. In this case, I recommend two different articles, one from the official Mount Vernon website and another from the New York Times. I recommend reading both because each one paints George Washington in a different light, and it's definitely interesting to notice and take stock of the contrast. Additionally, if you want a more in-depth story, I'm sure that Erica Armstrong Dunbar's book, titled Never Caught, The Washington's Relentless Pursuit of Their Runaway Slave Ona Judge, is great and would give way more details. Thank you so much for listening. I really hope that you enjoyed it. I had so much fun making it, so I hope that you had fun as well. As it is February, it is Black History Month, so I'm going to be designating the rest of my February episodes to Black History. But Black History is not exclusive to February. It exists all year round. So although I'll be dedicating February to it, I will continue to talk about it regardless of what month it is. I chose to tell the story of Ona Judge in an attempt to educate myself on a crucial part of our history that I am shamefully undereducated in. I'm also sorry that this episode is a little bit shorter than usual. I didn't intend for that to happen, but sometimes it just does when there's less details to include. Thank you so much for listening. Hopefully I will see you again next week.